Podcast Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast about what's previously in Europe. I'm your co-host Hugh in London. I'm here with lovely co-host Kieran in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
The name's Bond. Nation Bonds. Fiscal Bonds.
Yeah, okay. Sure, this week we are discussing the controversial constitutional court ruling from Germany, where they have decided to claim that the European Courts of Justice don't have supremacy over them, even though they definitely do. And also they have really questionable opinions on whether or not quantitative easing is a good idea and whether or not the ECB is allowed to do it. Get ready, it's going to be one of those sexy episodes where it's hot.
I mentioned things that I read in the Financial Times, the hottest paper.
I mean, it's hot pink. That's it's pretty
No, it's buckwove. Buckwove.
Is that what that's called?
It's the name of the material that like novels are made of.
Ah,
buckwove.
Okay, well, learn something new every day.
Yeah, graphic design degree, baby.
I'm glad you're finally putting that to use.
Woo!
Before that, I want to address we had a patron that rightfully took issue with me saying that you should put fish in paella, or paella as I like to call it, I mean you're technically correct. Most paella is supposed to have shellfish in it, I believe, which I guess is not really fish, and shellfish are different as a thing. Right.
Yeah. So my suspicion to this, and patron can feel free to reach out to us again and correct us if we're wrong, but my suspicion was this is a linguistic barrier where I think you said fish last week because in the English language, shellfish and fish are kind of seen as related just by the nature of those words. Whereas I think other languages, possibly in the native Spanish, they are completely separate concepts because, let's be fair, they're very different creatures.
Yeah, I'm not in no way advocating salmon paella, but I'm also not advocating shrimp paella because I'm also allergic to that.
So that will kill you, yes.
So I don't want it. So I make like chorizo sausage, predominantly a chicken paella. It's good, but it's not
interesting.
It's not like, you know, the right
Franco
one.
Would have you killed.
I think he'd have me killed for other things.
Possibly, yes.
Anyway.
Hang on, before we move on, you know about that whole Franco thing, right?
About paella. Oh, that he always had paella on hand.
Yeah, that's why like paella became like the national dish of Spain, because it's not a national dish. If anyone who's been to Spain will know that Spain, in terms of food, is very regionalist. Like, you'll go to another town and it will have like a completely different cuisine to the town next to it.
Right.
But like, paella is from a certain region, but then Franco liked it so much and would just like walk into people's restaurants no matter where he was in the country and be like, give me paella. So everyone, out of fear of being on the bad side of Franco, I had to cook paella.
That's a pretty horrifying story.
Yeah.
And it's quite similar to, I feel like, the main topic of today's podcast, which is the fear that the Germans rightfully have that they just have to constantly do quantitative easing, because otherwise Christine Lagarde will come into their bank and have them killed.
Yes.
In a issue of our recurring segment, also happening, where we talk about things that are also happening.
Yes.
This week we discussed the German Constitutional Court ruling that both the ECJ and ECB are bullshit.
Yeah, have you considered that this is fake and stupid and I hate you? That's what I say.
I want to preface this retired. With like something that I find is the most notable thing and explains this entire thing almost 100%, which is Andreas Voskule, who was until last week the president of the Federal Constitutional Court of Germany, who has now stepped down as his term was over. Was notably like very, very against the EC, like vocally against ECB's quantitative easing, saying like having said previously that it was like beyond their scope. Then mysteriously on one of his last days on the court, but I think this
last week basically,
I think it was his second or third last day. brings down like this massive ruling where he decides to contest the supremacy of whether or not the ECJ has jurisdiction over European law.
you know when you give your like 2 weeks notice or whatever at work, and then you're just like, I'm already checked out. I just have this. Yeah. I have this Price is Right spinning wheel here that just says yes or no on it, and that's how we're gonna do rulings the last week. Brah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So what basically happened was roughly a week ago. The as Hugh said, the like highest court in Germany, basically disagreed with a. Highest court in Europe court ruling and ruled that the Bundesbank, which is like Germany's national bank, had to like, you know, stop taking part in the ECB's bond buying program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fucked, basically, because it's ruined the chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, of which, like, Germany was the most insistent when the like ECB and the ECJ was like founded, I think almost like 22 years ago now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans were the ones that were most insistent that it had to be like a fully independent institution.
Yeah.
And time comes at you fast.
From the ECB perspective, basically, as various family members who are accountants have ranted at me about having basically like the problem of the euro from their perspective is that the ECB isn't independent enough, because otherwise you have different monetary policy happening randomly in states that are part of this common monetary union, and realistically you need to have something like the ECB having a strong arm of like deciding actual monetary policy, because otherwise the currency doesn't work, because you have this like currency you're expecting everyone to treat as one entity when in practice it's not. So any blow to the ECB's independence massively complicates the euro as a concept.
So like this is I think any like economist who's taken a stab at like the whole euro question would probably tell you that the euro exists in this weird Frankenstein halfway house of like being a single currency versus being like, I don't know, like a skin change, a computer game for like 22 different currencies.
Yeah, right.
Like it exists somewhere in between these two like things of just like you can get like, it exists somewhere in between the fact like being one single currency and somewhere in between the like weird thing like all the different currencies that are called dollars in the world. I mean, yeah, they're all called dollars, but like they're not really the same. That's the best way I can probably explain it as someone with very poor economic knowledge, but still. I think the promise, like, this was all from years of compromise, and even people who were hopeful for like the euro becoming something substantial said like, oh, we will progress towards and we will ease our way into, a more unified currency union. This court ruling has kind of said that the Bundesbank, which is the ECB's biggest like bond buyer, from like being the bank of the largest economy in the European Union, basically says like, no, you can't take part in the like quantitative easing bond buying scheme that the ECB is doing, because we think that's stupid and blah. While there's a good thread that will probably be linked in the show notes by Henrik Enderlein, who is a director, professor of political economy, director of Dolores Berlin, very good guy, good for like a left economic take on things, basically says that at the end of this we're probably not going to see a stop to any of the quantitative easing programs or bond buying programs that exist currently, but what has effectively happened is like a weird power grab by like national law mm-hmm. versus European law, namely in the face of Germany. Like the for anyone who's been paying attention to the European Union for the last 5 or so years will know that like Hungary and Poland have also been like pulling this shit mm-hmm. in a different, more like fuck with the judiciary kind of sense rather than like a economic sense, but it's effectively the same thing. Mm-hmm. This would, if this had happened with like a smaller country or if Hungary had done this, this wouldn't be the news that it is. But like by basically where the High Court in Germany basically saying that we need to insist that the ECB is not involved in economic policy, but only involved in monetary policy. Mm-hmm. A distinction that most economists agree does not exist. The two are the same. It is a Venn diagram that is like a perfect circle. Or at least one so heavily overlapped that the distinction is useless.
Yeah.
But by saying that, it basically defers power to the German High Court to decide what is and isn't economic policy, what is and isn't the scope of the ECJ.
Yeah.
So, yay for that. which is fun. So that's kind of what's happened. And the effects of this, the reason why we didn't put this into one of our recurring sections where we make some of the value judgments, such as this ain't it, chief. The reason I didn't feel comfortable doing that was because this could be reversed. I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of the ECB's economic policy to begin with. Things like that. And then at the same time, it was like, this effect might be very hard to observe because, as Henrik Enderlein is saying, we could see the ECB kind of go on choo-choo for the meantime, and then it's only later does this start to gum up the works.
Yeah.
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 What effect you were talking about, though, was maybe a bit more severe. You mentioned to me off mic before we recorded the aspect of like how this effectively just gums up the works
mm-hmm.
for like anything that needs to be done now.
Yeah, it comes at like a very bad timing, which like effectively like, so this was the ECJ decision related to this was resolved, you know, more than 2 years ago. This effectively is a group of German economists, politicians and lawyers who effectively don't like this policy because they're Spartan old cultists who want effectively like want the like small, they effectively want small government, and they don't like the idea that there's any EU like wide solidarity where if Italy needs to raise funds, they can do so via the ECB's bond buying system, which if you were to look at it like massively big picture, you're like, well, in theory, that's effectively saying like Germany is by extension loaning Italy the money. You're like, well, that's not really strictly true, one, but also why shouldn't they be allowed to raise funds? they would love for the Italian government not to be able to raise lots of money to you know, have public services and buy like spend infrastructure via the state. They want every country to do Schwarz and Null and run perfectly balanced national budgets, which is like a really like outdated economic position and one that never really made sense in the first place. Like it was never like the consensus that it was a good idea.
No, and it was only one that kind of worked for Germany's very specific situation, because Germany's, if I understand correctly, Germany is quite export-driven as an economy,
yes,
but also like way more sufficient, like self-sufficient. So the problem that you get with Italy is also quite like export-driven economy. Like Italy still has a really big like food manufacturing, agribusiness, even a decent like auto industry, but the problem is that Italy is a little less self-sufficient and is also quite reliant on imports. Mm-hmm. So it's able to do a little bit of a trade, and sometimes there's a bit of a deficit, but Germany can just export and kind of just keep accumulating money that it can then do to spend to like maintain itself. Mm-hmm. But like when you start to enforce Schwarze Null, which is the cute German way of saying like basically austerity,
yeah.
not going beyond your means,
yeah.
In countries that can't really afford to do that, you start getting like really, really shitty situations, mm-hmm. Really desperate situations, lots of cuts to what are, when a pandemic hits, turns out are essential services.
Yeah.
So like, it's also worth pointing out that people might have noticed this if they ever come to like certain parts of Germany. Specifically, I would want to say Berlin and everything else that's kind of classified as East Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You might also notice it in other cities that aren't like, you'd probably notice it in places like Hannover and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Germany is not as like pristine or as technologically advanced as you might think, or as flashy, let's put it that way, as flashy
yeah.
as you might suspect the largest economy in the European Union to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it's like a it's an unwillingness to spend like a lot of money on public infrastructure, like on like long term things that cost a lot of money up front, because you're like, but then we would have to borrow money, and we're not doing that. Like beyond our income, we're just going to save up and buy it at the end. And it's like a thing that like, well, people also aren't encouraged to live like that. Like people take out mortgages on their houses. If you ran like the German system, you'd effectively be saying, save up all of your money and buy your house in cash at some point, which is, yeah, sure. But it's basically, there is a large appetite of lots and lots of influential German people, including lots of people on the judiciary, who don't like the idea of quantitative easing at all, even in a pandemic situation. And this has been very unfortunately timed, because this is probably going to happen at some point, where someone in the German court system was going to like try and gum up the ECJ for as long as they could. But it's probably not long term going to work, because I think it's pretty clear that they're, you know, wrong, and it's not necessarily the ECB is right. It's just the their reasoning for it seems to make no sense. So like, to be clear, neither of us are lawyers, but there's a blog post by Peter Meyer Beck, who's a judge on Germany's Federal Supreme Court, which is different to the Constitutional Court, but it's their one of their higher courts, who effectively is picking apart this decision as saying like it makes no legal sense. One of the points that I really like that he made that was effectively it. Well, like he makes a lot of the same points of you're making these weird distinctions that you've never defined anywhere between monetary and economic policy, but also effectively their position, what they've demanded is, as opposed to saying outright the ECB was definitely wrong, they're saying we don't have the evidence to say whether or not the ECB has broken EU and or German law by having this policy. So what we demand is for the ECB to give us their rationality of whether or not this policy was proportional, and then we will decide whether or not they broke the law. And his point effectively is that there is no legal framework to say you have complete independence unless we decide you're not being proportional, in which case you're no longer independent and we can say something you're doing is illegal. It's like, well then, so they're not independent. So they're only independent as long as you say they're independent based on a non-defined criteria. So it's like, it's effectively, it's the people who are obsessed with their economic worldview and seem to just be like furiously lashing out that anyone has disagreed with them. And that it got this far. It's quite...
There's a lot of stuff that has to be provided into context with this, which is like, I guess Germany's obsession with Schwarze Null in particular is obscene. Like it is weird. There are statues of the Black Zero in certain parts of Germany, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
This also, I think, similarly coincides with the... let me just get this title correct, but I believe it was the finance minister of the German state of Hessen, or Hessen in Germany. Yes. So, Thomas Schäfer, who he's a CDU politician, CDU being the center-right Merkel's party, the big champions of Schwarze Null. They've campaigned on Schwarze Null. Mm. Like in Berlin, they try to campaign on like Schwarze Null, like in a dominatrix outfit, kind of trying to appeal to Berlin's kind of like kinky club sexual history thing. And was like, what are you doing? This is why everyone here votes like the Greens and Die Linke. Go away. but like,
do you like being tied up? What if all of your budgets were tied up?
I mean, it made something very clear for me that, like, the CDU is a party that just is really into, like, fin-doming. But on a more serious note, Thomas Schaefer made, like, international news as the, like, his actual minister, yeah, Minister of Finance for the state of Hesse between 2010 and 2020. Mm-hmm. The reason his time in office ended was because on the 28th of March of this year, he threw himself in front of a train. Mm-hmm. The reported story, although I know some people who are like, this seems weird, is that he committed suicide. Because he was informed of the financial response required to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
Jesus.
Yeah. That is the story so far, but it's too early to say. And like, it's all kind of based on like people around him, including family and stuff. But suicide is not necessarily something to make light of. But like, this is the kind of weird level of commitment that like a certain section of German political, economic and like legal society is committed to the idea of we cannot spend our way out of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Which should kind of paint you why like a section of political, legal, economic German society is willing to like back this and push through this court ruling, which could effectively like blow up the European Union, a structure and institution that has done nothing but benefit German society.
Mm-hmm.
Like in politics, like it's like in the kind of very crass realpolitik way, like the EU is at the very least Germany's sphere of influence.
Yeah.
So like, why would you want to blow that up? Without it, Germany becomes like a relatively like mid-tiered economy that is subject to constant harassment, probably by like aggressive neighbors, like a competitive France or like a military expansionist Russia.
Mm-hmm.
It's you'd put Germany in the same like place as like Japan, which is an economy that's doing very well for itself, but like heavily dependent on like foreign diplomacy of the United States and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this weird situation, and it's also kind of leads us to the weird contradiction that we now have to deal with, which is what will the German government proper do about this situation? Because this is the judiciary, it's like a part of the judiciary, as that little like blog post you were talking about pointed out. Other aspects of the German judiciary are not happy with this.
No.
But
It creates like a very unbalanced setup where suddenly German courts will potentially start to be asked, we want you to vote, we want you to rule against this ECJ decision we've had against us. And you're like, well, oh no, this is not the point of this.
Mm.
This, like, as in, if this can be done for, like, the ECB, can it be done for any other ruling? So like antitrust, for instance, if the ECJ says some company has engaged in an antitrust violation, can they appeal to their country of residence? So say Unilever does it, can they then turn to Amsterdam, like the Dutch courts, and just be like, we contest this, we want you to rule it unconstitutional, it's bad for the Dutch economy, and the Dutch court might on an off day be like, sure, and then suddenly you're into a multi-year was this antitrust or not back and forth.
I mean, like, no, the incentive will always be for the local court to favor probably under the current political situations, the local court will always favor the like local giant conglomerate company that hires like an entire village in the Dutch hinterland. Like, we'd probably just get into more dodgy situations of, like, weird national preferential treatment to, like, these sweetheart deal industries. And now they would just have more of a... It would be more of an out-of-the-open legal relationship rather than, like, the wink-wink, nudge-nudge relationship that existed before, like, say, between Germany and the auto industry. So... Merkel kind of made some statements around this, and keep in mind Merkel is like from the CDU, the party that has been most committed to Schwarz und Null. She said things like solvable, bridge, crucial, hugely significant. This quote is the one that I find probably most insidious of all sides must deal with this issue with intelligence. And I'm like... Right, but like one side of this situation, namely the side that's like associated with you and your political ideology, is being called like an idiot by everyone else in the world, including like people who are probably politically aligned with you as well. Like I genuinely think Merkel has found herself in a very odd situation with this. The thing she constantly stressed was the European Commission might initiate an infringement procedure against Germany, which is something that Merkel and the like parliament wing of the CDU is very much emphasizing must not happen. And we must avoid this confrontation between Germany and the European Union as a set of institutions, because they are in an aesthetic and kind of like front-facing kind of sense of it, in a facade kind of sense. The facade is that they are one and the same. Like the European Union as a set of institutions is only as strong as like the major countries within it backing those set of institutions. Like the European Union looks weak if Germany and France are trying to like undermine it.
Especially for issues like this with the ECB, like their bond buying program is not as successful without the Bundesbank. And if the German government decides to like wait around and just comply with not participating in any bond buying for a while, then that will massively neuter the ability for the EU to, you know, assist in the coronavirus recovery initially, which will have a knock-on effect to every country that was going to in any way benefit from the coronavirus bond like bond buying program.
And this is also like in a context of not only is that happening, but like there's a large push by significant forces within the European Union, namely like France, to say that this program needs to probably go further if we want to solve like the problems that are going to be faced by all of our economies, including like big heavy hitters, including like France and Spain. And one big one, so there's a really good piece in The Guardian, which is basically a conversation between Yanis Varoufakis and Irish economist David McWilliams about like what this could mean and like what is the European Union going to kind of do in response to like... They're broadly talking about the coronavirus like pandemic and the like 2020 giant recession that like every economist told us was coming, but then like now it's solely the fault of the coronavirus, which is funny how that narrative has changed. But anyway, they were talking about like what the European Union could do, and 2 points they made, which was like Italy is probably the one that's most threatened to leave. Like anti-euro, particularly euro as a currency, sentiment within Italy is very strong, and there is a lot of political forces in Italy that could capitalize on that. And you could have basically an Italy that leaves the European Union, to which they kind of pointed out that because they use the term that I kind of really like, Italy is a part of the European Union's emotional hinterland. Italy is like such a symbolic member, even though like the UK's economy was bigger than Italy's, the European Union could not really stand to lose Italy.
Yeah.
Being that it's a former member, or it's a founding member, it's like, it's quintessential with the idea of Europe. You ask most people from outside of Europe to name a European country, and Italy is probably one of the first five mentioned.
Yeah.
Then the other aspect that they kind of talked about, which I found very interesting, was they said that maybe the problem that a lot of people, when speculating on the future of the European Union, have is they often envision the European Union being like gone. When David McWilliams, I think, makes a very good point, which is, I think it was Yanis who made the point, actually, sorry, but one of the two of them, there was only two people in the article. they made the point that the European Union could effectively become the CIS, the Commonwealth of Independent States, which was this, the like former Soviet Union countries kind of working together, thing that was founded when the Soviet Union collapsed, and then effectively became nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it still exists. There's an office somewhere in Moscow or Tashkent or whatever. But it does nothing other than to, like, some symbolic gestures every so often, a think piece, a kind of, like, career manufacturing facility for a bunch of, like, political science people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's effectively, it's a hollow institution that has no power, but it still exists on paper.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's what they're kind of saying could result if this becomes the new normal of, like, every state just actually gets to say, yeah, ECJ rulings are fun and fine or whatever, but, you know, how about no?
Yeah. I think that this especially has, like, makes it quite problematic where, like, we've discussed in the podcast before about things like Article 7, which is the like mechanism by which the EU can start like taking away voting rights and funds from and issuing fines to European countries that are kind of like breaking the rules, and kind of the discussion around whether or not the Poland ones make sense. And that's largely around the Polish government effectively packing their constitutional court with like friendly judges and getting rid of all of their political opponents from the courts. So if suddenly you've set the precedent where whether or not it'll hold in the grand scheme of things, because what are they going to rule on? If the Polish Constitutional Court just announces that any Article 7 procedures are invalid, then what's the point of them? And yes, like, you could already argue what was the point of them already, because in practice, they probably weren't going to come to anything. But if Poland can just preempt the conversation with, you have no jurisdiction anyway, then suddenly the infrastructure of Europe kind of dissolves to some extent. If there's no political power there, suddenly you're going to see, like exactly as you said, like a hollowing out of the institutions. If the Commission has no power at all, you'll start seeing less and less money going to it. The Parliament already, like, questionably has very little power as it is. You'll stop seeing any political capital being spent there at all. And then the ECB, similarly, if those other things are true, you could start to see people considering leaving the euro currency, at which point the ECB becomes, you know, less and less powerful each country that does it. I think it's easy to kind of, you know, think that, oh, well, that's kind of far-fetched and is unlikely to happen, but you can consider, well, a lot of things were far-fetched and unlikely to happen, and this actually seems very much in the scheme of moving parts. This seems very, very possible, and this could very easily be seen as, like, not like the straw that broke the camel's back. It's not necessarily that momentous. It's potentially like a suggestion to people that, like, well, you could do this, and the next thing that happens on could be a lot more impactful. Or this is just the starting of the hollowing of, like, the ECB's autonomy, which will lead to things down the road.
It's a potential laying of groundwork, effectively. It's not the, as you said, the straw that breaks the camel back, but, like, where did the straw come from? Why is the camel here?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Like, it's more of a that situation. So I think the last little thing I want to talk about before we wrap up is how this might amount to nothing, because that's also a possibility. And so basically the political wing of the CDU and those who like in the CDU who understands like their political project rather than the economic one do not want a conflict with the European Union. They recognize from like a diplomacy perspective and also ultimately an economic one, because Schwarze Null is a death cult, that like it's not in their interest to be look like something that's going ahead, like going against the European Union. Similarly, the judge who did this has retired, and we could have this like just chalked up to like he was just being crazy. He was just wilding out in his last week. No one threw him a going away party, whatever. Like they could just totally roll this back and avoid any kind of conflict. There's definitely an incentive to do that. The European Union could continue with its current strategy at the moment, which is, although it's only been a week, their current strategy is to ignore it. is to basically ignore it as this weird oddity that just kind of happened. Put that in like a footnote in the history books kind of thing, because the ruling effectively told the Bundesbank to sell all the bonds that it bought via the scheme in the period of 3 months. These 3 months are possibly not the best time to be selling off like Mediterranean national bonds. I don't know who the buyers of that would be. is effectively my question.
Yeah, it would be effectively do other national banks want to absorb the want to buy this debt?
Yeah,
and the answer is probably like maybe, but like not probably at the volumes that the Bundesbank holds.
Probably not all of them. Probably not now.
No, bad time.
Yeah, anyone who you could probably sell this to is probably another EU member nation and probably just doesn't want to participate in this weird farce. And before it even comes to that, the Bundesbank might realize that would be the case. So that's also an aspect of it as well. And one little thing that I want to kind of talk about in regards to this as well, because it's something that you're more noticing on the ground in Germany, namely with some headlines and some people talking on the news and stuff like that, which is, despite this like group of like lawyer and politician and economist cranks who are seriously committed to the idea of Schwarze Null, there is a bit of like consent being manufactured within like German press about the idea of, hey, we may need to like spend our way out of this crisis. Even if the crisis has not hit us so hard, we might need to like help Italy, Spain, France, whoever spend their way out of this crisis. Like they'll talk about it in a European sense. A good example of one that made it into like English speaking press was what's the actual title again? The Bundesverbund der Deutschen Industrie, which is the Federation of German Industries, is an organization of German industry and industry-related service providers, which is like 100,000 companies in Germany, basically.
That's a pretty legit number of companies.
That's more than your fucking 1,075 crank economists who complain to the... You're running to the fucking... goddamn courts. They told the judges on us.
They weren't supposed to know.
But like, yeah, they called for what they deemed fiscal solidarity. So basically saying that calling for a bigger German contribution to the post-coronavirus recovery, which is kind of the exact opposite of what these people are doing. There's kind of like fertile ground for this as well, because a good portion of the German public kind of agrees with this idea. In general, I think the German public is aware of how like the European Union has benefited Germany, and they don't really want to see it like gone.
So in some sense, it's not necessarily manufacturing consent. It's like noticing the consent exists and reminding people about it.
yeah, a little bit, but I think it's possible that you also have like a section of the German population that holds to like that thought and yes. the Schwarzenau thought in their head simultaneously.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
yeah, we have to save Italy, but if they could just not spend any money while doing it, that'd be great. it's the sugar to swallow down the pill, I guess, or something like that. And there is still like as the statues and the things, everything mm-hmm. we've talked about with Schwarzenau, there is a section of like diehard German population that's committed to this. But the other aspect of the fertile ground thing is that like it seems pretty clear that the CDU is quite divided in this, like internally, mm-hmm. while they're trying to present a united front, and Merkel is also trying to like bat away the right wing of her party. Mm-hmm. Now that no one likes AKK, and AKK is no longer going to be the successor of the party.
Yeah.
But then the wider picture is like France is in agreement with this. Italy is in agreement with this. I believe it's everyone in the European Union, bar the countries that are initially opposed to it, which was Germany, Finland, Austria, and the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And the only country that, as far as I know, has stayed neutral on the topic, Cyprus. Good old Cyprus.
We should go at some point discuss. I want to hear what Finland's opposition reasoning is.
Oh, they're weird psychopaths. I don't know. Snow Yeti, snow witches. I hate them all. I don't understand.
It's just strange to be like no Eurobonds, but also 4-day week.
Like, yeah, I'm starting to get my general. We have to do an episode on, but my general impression of a lot of like Finnish social democracy is a very like fuck you got mine aspect to it. It's just like yes, we can have social democracy, but we're not paying for your social democracy.
You have to come very far north. It's cold. We earned our social democracy.
You can't have social democracy in the sun. All the Finns will move to Italy.
Yeah, we have a brain drain problem now. You want?
Oh, that would be insane. Yeah, so like it's there's definitely ground for it, and the fact that like the representatives of German industry are just like, yeah, fuck Schwarzenau, that's a big deal. That's kind of like where we're at. So like everything we're talking about might be kind of like disregarded. I think the problem of like ignoring it is it creates this weird legal loophole that might still exist unless you like actively close it up.
I think the thing about it is that from the perspective of the EU institutions, their position so von der Leyen has like made a statement about this and effectively is saying there is no legal loophole. The courts in Luxembourg have final say.
Yeah,
you can say whatever you want, but there's no like, that's nice that you think the ECJ is invalid. Your opinion on that is invalid, so it doesn't matter. So it's like ignoring it while pointing out that it, like, not in the way that Merkel was ignoring it in a much more direct way, which is effectively saying that any like national court that is saying that the ECJ doesn't have supremacy on EU laws is incorrect, and that's it. It's like the ECJ might be happy to rule on the German constitutional court's lack of jurisdiction over their jurisdiction. I think that is like it, like due to the exceptional circumstances, that might be what ends up happening is nothing. I think it might it might actually avoid the danger of ignoring it in the way of just dismissing it out of hand, as long as you like explicitly dismiss it out of hand, which they are sort of doing.
Yeah, that might be the way out of it, but we'll see. But like it's I guess the reason that I wanted to bring this up ultimately, even though it might be dismissed, is this is definitely something that is only going to be covered by like just the worst people to be cornered at in parties. Like that in the form of like a press. So like the FTE has spilled a lot of ink on it. There's some like personal economist blogs they're talking about it, blah blah blah, and it's insanely boring and stupidly complicated, and all, you know, all has the premise of existing in a system that probably shouldn't have existed in the first place, because it's just like weird throwing numbers around. Anyway, the whole thing is that it's very boring, but it's one of those things that could have very easily slipped by the net and kind of like undone the European project in like 10 years.
It could be secretly eating away at the legitimacy of like the EU as a concept. Well, a lot of people out there are being like, the EU's great. And you're like, something's eating it from the inside, and it's the like weird fiscal conservatives in Germany. It's not the people you thought it would be.
No,
It's the people who like on paper should love the EU, because overall it does like great things for them, and actually they have a lot of undue influence over it. And that's a complaint a lot of people have over it. I always find it akin to like when I discover like very conservative people online who hate very conservative journalists, because they think the journalists are actually in the pocket of the left for some reason. I'm like, but they're like members of the Conservative Party. I don't understand. I don't understand what your problem with them is, but there seems to be a lot of you who all think this, and I'm very confused. Yeah. And it's a similar thing of like a lot of people who like people like kind of on like especially economists on the left, like I guess Yanivaris Farkas would be a big name, who have like criticisms of Europe as a structure, but isn't necessarily saying like we need to like burn it down because it disagrees with this like principle of mine. But like there are, you know, extremist German conservatives who effectively are saying that. They're like, we want to take powers away from the ECB due to what we're, you know, throwing together a complicated legal argument for it, but in practice it's because they're trying to do quantitative easing and we don't like it. They're too progressive.
Yeah,
it's just like, okay, sure. Right.
So like a lot of people on the left, especially like left, like either Euro-obsessed people or like economics-obsessed people, people who would very much like Yanis Varoufakis. I like Yanis Varoufakis, but I'm not as into economy as other people are. Will kind of point out that the real threat to the European Union is the German conservatives, who are up until this point at least hadn't like fucked with the EU rules to make them worse, but have effectively like used EU rules like with the Fiscal Stability Act and things like that, or Fiscal Stability Pact, I should say, that like was a system that only really worked for Germans, Schwarze Null, like I mentioned earlier, because of their particular situation, but didn't really work for the rest of Europe. Yeah. And the real threat to like Europe as a political project was that section of German political society's insistence on maintaining that rule.
Yeah, right.
Whereas now we've gone one further. And so
it's largely because the retiring president of the Constitutional Court in Germany decided to like mic drop on his way out.
Jesus Christ.
And to be like, I'm the best judge, I have all the rulings, all of my rulings are the most important, goodbye.
If you know him personally, buy him like a cake or one of those cards that plays music when you open them. I don't know.
He was almost president of Germany as well. And seemed to turn it down. I'm not totally sure why, but
because it's a powerless position.
Like, that's probably it.
Because if he wouldn't, on his last day of being president of Germany, he couldn't have done this.
Just comes out and is like, the Bundestag is does not have supremacy over me, and is like, what?
Oh no, it's happening again. Also, I'm Kaiser now. Mic drop.
It just seems incredible. Like, as in, because if this goes nowhere, this seems like just incredibly petty from like the stupidest people.
Which would be the funniest outcome, which I'm starting to believe that the future of like all politics is just whatever's the funniest outcome, in a very like dark humor kind of way. But like, yeah, I think the funniest outcome is it was just some cranks like last day, like last week at work, lashing out because no one liked him.
Yeah, I'm done.
Well, with that, that was another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is recorded and produced by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like the show, please visit us at previouslyineurope.eu. And there you can find all the links to our various social medias, which you can share and say nice things to us on. We're on Twitter. We have a Facebook group. We have a Discord. We have a subreddit. We have all those good things. But if you want to support us in other ways, you can tell a friend. Telling a friend is really helpful. Spreading the podcast by word of mouth. If there's anyone in your life who you think might like this podcast or find it useful, tell them about it. That really, really helps. If you've done that already, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. A 4 or 5 star review with some nice words inside it will really help. Make sure to tell us about that, because Apple Podcasts, you have to search by each individual country. You guys are all over the place. I know that. That's okay. But like, if you leave us a review, tell us which country you left the review so we can read it and see the nice things you said. That'd be nice. If you've done all those things and still want to support us, we do have a Patreon. Patreon.com/previouslyineurope. There you can leave us a certain amount of money to help us keep the podcasting lights on. We will also shout out your name if you've donated more than $3 a month. Like these cool cats: Jared Burke, Dreers Arian, Echo 2100, Justin Paul Sammons, Michael Hall, Newt Alexander, Noah McLaughlin, Patrick Seba, Petra V, Subliminal Kid, and Svemvest. So if you want to be like those cool people, donate to us $3 or more per month. We try to do bonus episodes whenever we can. There you can vote for what topic you want us to cover for a bonus episode, and you'll get to listen to the bonus episode in advance. So yeah, with all of that, thanks for listening.